doing a little political science for the last, well, this will be 15 messages, about 15 hours. I'm studying and teaching about the lives of the presidents of the United States, and we're on number 15 right now, James Buchanan. And we always start off by reading the Bible, Romans the 13th chapter. Let every person be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God, and those which exist are established by God. We're talking about government. Human government was established by God. Human government protects the good people from the bad people, supposedly. We're supposed to live under what we might call a social agreement. That we don't try to cheat and to overcome our neighbors, steal what they have, take it, deceive them, all of this, all of these little laws that we have in the book of Deuteronomy protect the innocent from the guilty. In this last year in our country, we have seen a total upheaval where right is wrong and wrong is right. Right is right and wrong is still wrong, no matter what. In this message today, in this study, we're going to learn about council culture. We're going to learn about a man that tried his dead level best to preserve the Union. Verse number 2, therefore, he who resists authority has opposed the ordinance of God, and they who oppose will receive condemnation upon themselves. For rulers are not a cause of fear for good behavior, but for evil. We're talking about godly rulers, by the way. We're not talking about ungodly rulers. Do you want to have fear, no fear of authority? An anarchy? We've had anarchy for one whole year in America. One whole year. It's not fun. How many people's lives have been destroyed with this anarchy? How many people the government did not protect them from the wicked ones? Do what is good and you will have praise for it. For it is a minister of God to you for good. But if you do what is evil, be afraid, for it does not bear the sword, capital punishment for nothing, for it is a minister of God, an avenger, who brings wrath upon the one who practices evil. Wherefore it is necessary to be under godly subjection, not only because of wrath, but also for conscience' sake. For because of this you also pay taxes, for rulers are servants of God, devoting themselves to this very thing. Render to all what is due to them, tax to whom tax is due, custom to whose custom is due, and fear to whom fear is due, and honor to whom honor is due. Now, let's go into a life of an honest man. A man that tried his dead level best to preserve the United States of America in union. James Buchanan Jr. was born April the 23rd, 1791, in a log cabin in Cove Gap, Pennsylvania. Abraham Lincoln was not the only one that was born in a log cabin, and quite a few of the presidents were. He was born to James Buchanan, Sr., 1761 to 1821, and Elizabeth Speer, 1767 to 1833. His parents were immigrants from Ireland. They were of Scots descent. Buchanan birth, shortly after his birth, the family moved to a farm near Mercerburg, Pennsylvania. And in 1794, the family moved into town. His father became the wealthiest resident there as a merchant, farmer, and real estate investor. He became a very wealthy man. Remember, James Buchanan was born in the log cabin. He attended the Old Stone Academy and then Dickinson College in Carlisle, Pennsylvania. He was not a very good student to begin with, and he was almost expelled for bad behavior, but he begged them to give him another chance. And he graduated with honors. In 1809, by the way, 1809 is the year that Abraham Lincoln was born, and that's the year that my great-great-great-grandfather was born, Smith Paul. Later that year, he moved to Lancaster, and a leading lawyer there accepted Buchanan as a apprentice. Matter of fact, back then, actually, do you realize that doctors did not go to college to become doctors? They were apprentices with another doctor. They learned their bad habits and good habits, and medicine was not very good at this time. It was kind of counterproductive. Many of the lawyers moved to Harrisburg, Pennsylvania, the state capital, but Buchanan stayed in Lancaster his whole life. He had a pretty good income. Back in this period of time, in 1821, he was making $11,000 a year, equivalent to over $200,000 a year now. He handled many, many... What? Yeah, that's quite a bit of money. He began his political career in the Federalist policy. Now, another thing about Buchanan, he was probably the most qualified man to ever seek the presidency in this period of time. The most qualified man to seek the presidency. Now, I know that the History Channel, a lot of these writers... have played him down tremendously. That he had no forethought, that he was a very dull man, etc., etc., etc. Now, I'm going to tell you what he did. He was the 15th president of the United States of America from March the 4th, 1857, to March the 4th, 1861. He did everything that he could do to preserve the Union. He was the 20th United States minister to the United Kingdom. From 1853 to 1856. He was the 17th United States Secretary of State in office between 1845 and 1849. He was Secretary of State under James K. Polk and Zachary Taylor. He was the 5th United States Minister to Russia. In 1832 to 1833. And you have to realize that this man laid a lot of foundations as a foreign minister to many countries. He was the chairman of the House Judiciary Committee from 1829 to 1831. He was a member of the United States House of Representatives from Pennsylvania in office from 1821 to 1831, 10 years. He was a member of the Pennsylvania House of Representatives from Lancaster County in office 1814 to 1816. He started out as a Federalist from 1814 to 1824, then a Democratic Republican in 1824 to 1828, and then a Democrat between 1828 and 1868. His niece was First Lady, basically, in the White House while he was president. And this man was also in the military service, but not as a general, not as a captain, not as a lieutenant colonel or anything like that. He was a private. Now, privates are the ones that do everything. So this man was a private. He was in Henry Shipton's company of the 1st Brigade and the 4th Division. He was in the War of 1812, and he also was in defense of the city of Baltimore. He believed that America was being divided because of a culture that was trying to cancel out the other culture. Let me say that one more time. He believed that America was being divided by a culture that was trying to cancel out the other culture. And even though he was not a slaveholder, he believed in the absolute necessity of states' rights. Now today, we have a very important situation in history in America where states' rights may become very, very, very important. James Buchanan was a Freemason. He was the master of the Masonic Lodge number 43 in Lancaster, and he was the district deputy grand master of the Grand Lodge of Pennsylvania. When the British invaded Maryland in 1814, he served in defense of Baltimore as a private. That means he's out there in the ditch. He's out there with a rifle in his hand. The man put his life on the line for us. He was the only president with military experience that was not an officer. He was a minister to Russia through the Federalist Party. He was a great admirer of Andrew Jackson, which believed in states' rights. He was a civil rights defender, a states' rights defender in every way. Because he believed in states' rights, he believed that the upcoming Republican Party was going to divide and destroy the nation. He believed America would be thrown into civil war. And he also said early that if the South decided to secede from the Union, they had all the right to do with it because they were being pushed and canceled to cancel their culture and their whole livelihood. Slavery had been a problem with America for a long time, but it wasn't a problem in the slave states. It was a problem that the northern states, the anti-slavery states, wouldn't leave the South alone. As simple as that. Now, I'm not for slavery because I'm an American Indian. I am not white. I'm only 1/32nd white, according to DNA. Now, there were American Indians that were slaves in America, a whole lot more of them than there were ever black slaves in America. They exported American Indian slaves as runners and slaves in Europe and France and England and all over the place. The Anglo-Saxon society would not have existed in America if the American Indian had not rescued them. The American Indian were great farmers and had great plantations all in the Northeast and the Southeast also. There were plantations, there were great farms. They had manicured this country from one end to the other, and from one end of this country to the other, it was a democracy led by different tribes. There were never any kings in America. There were not any kings or chiefs in America. There were never any Indian princes. The Europeans tried to make one Indian ahead of a nation, which was not possible because they believed they were total democracies. No man could sign a treaty for any group of people. Every person, man, woman, and child, would sign it if it had been done legally. Now, he stood not for slavery, but that states had a right to practice what they did in that state. He didn't believe that slavery, he believed slavery was an evil. And he said, sooner or later, it will dissolve, but shall not be dissolved by the federal government. It will be dissolved because states will have that. And I don't think that the South would have stood up so hard, because if they had not had to do it to defend what they believed and what their culture. The North wanted to cancel the Southern culture and lives. The North had slaves. The North had a lot of slaves. They were white slaves working in factories. And white slaves, the children were slaves. By the time they became 5 years old, they were working in factories and working in very dangerous jobs and becoming maimed and killed. The Southern Baptist started Sunday schools so that they could educate the children and get learn so that they could learn how to read and write, so they could get out of the factories and away from the factories, and so they could begin a life where they would not be slaves. James Buchanan helped Andrew Jackson to run for his presidency. He was a congressman. And he considered some New England congressmen as dangerous radicals and dangerous to the solidity of the Union. He finally decided not to run anymore. And after Jackson was reelected in 1832, offered Buchanan the position of United States Ambassador to Russia. I've heard people say that he hated, that Jackson hated him. This man helped Jackson, and he was an admirer of Jackson. I heard somebody say that he sent him as far away, he hated him so much that he sent him as far away because he could get him over all the way to Russia on the other side of the world. Buchanan helped Andrew Jackson win the presidency. And he was a great admirer of Jacksonian politics. He didn't want to leave the country, but he finally agreed and he left. He served as ambassador for 18 months, a year and a half, during which time that he learned French. You know that George Washington would not even write his own speeches because he did not know the classical languages. He considered himself completely uneducated. The language of the world was French. Now, Sharon, I think you took French in school. I think you learned French, if I remember right. Yeah. He learned French, the trade language of democracy and diplomacy. He negotiated commercial and maritime treaties with the Russian Empire. He returned home after his stint there in Russia, and he was elected to the Pennsylvania State Legislature as a United States Senator. a Jacksonian now. This means a follower of Jackson and Jacksonian policies. He opposed the recharting of the Second Bank of the United States. And he backed Jackson from the what they might call the bank war. Buchanan also opposed the gag rule sponsored by John C. Calhoun. He fought John C. Calhoun. Matter of fact, John C. Calhoun and his opposition to the Buchanan and many of the other Democratic Republicans, or Democrats, if you want to call them that, actually threw the election to Abraham Lincoln later in the next election. Between John C. Calhoun and Buchanan and others, Stephen Douglas, they tried to suppress the anti-slavery petitions. Now remember, the gag rule is that you couldn't talk about slavery. You could write a little bit about it. You could do anything else, but you couldn't bring any motions of the anti-slavery in the House of Representatives or the Senate to stop the division of the country. Now, he did everything he could do to stop the division. He faulted the abolitionist for dividing the nation of the United States. Remember, he was Secretary of State under two presidents. He believed in manifest destiny. He believed that America should go on and completely cover the continent of the United States. He opposed the Webster-Ashburton Treaty that was going to secede and surrender the lands to the United Kingdom. He also argued for the annexation of Texas and Oregon Territory. In 1844, Buchanan positioned himself as a potential alternative to the former President Martin Van Buren, but it went to James K. Polk, who won the election. He was offered the position of Secretary of State in the Polk administration, as well as the alternative serving in the Supreme Court. He accepted the State Department post and served for the duration of Polk's administration in office. James Buchanan and James K. Polk doubled the territory of the United States. Polk didn't do it alone. This man helped him. This man is a not do nothing man. This man was a great American hero. He tried his best to preserve the Union. They gained the Oregon Territory and the Treaty of Guadalupe Hidalgo, which included the territory that is now Texas, California, Nevada, New Mexico, Arizona, Utah, and Colorado. And all during James Buchanan's presidency, he was plagued with Mormonism and Mormon revolt. He handled many negotiations with Britain over Oregon and Washington. He believed in compromise. He believed things could be settled except with something else besides the bullets and knives. He later advocated for the annexation of the entire territory. Finally agreed to the division at the 49th parallel. And after the outbreak of the Mexican-American War, he advised Polk against taking territory south of the Rio Grande River in New Mexico. Polk didn't trust Buchanan very much. Polk was only to be president for one time. But he thought Buchanan was trying to rival him and shine during his presidency that he would become the next president. He did quietly seek the nomination in 1848. But Lewis Cass was nominated. In 1848, Buchanan returned to private life. And he bought a house in Wheatland on the outskirts of Lancaster. And he entertained many guests. He was a named president and board of trustees of Franklin and Marshall College in Lancaster. And he served there until his death, basically, in 1866. He was known as a doughface.
What?
A doughface. Doughface, like dough, flour, dough. Doughface, because he was a northerner, but he represented all the people. He thought a representative ought to represent all the people of the nation as a unit. And he tried to protect the South from the abolitionists of the North, even though he was from the North. He believed that the South had rights. And that every state in the Union was a sovereign nation, so to speak. A nation within a nation. He won the support of many Southern delegates. Franklin Pierce was elected. And Franklin Pierce tried to nominate him as vice president, and he declined. During this period of time, Buchanan went to England in the summer of 1853, and he remained abroad as a minister for 3 years. He helped sign the Clayton-Bolivar Treaty. Which committed both countries to in joint control for a future canal, which would become the Panama Canal later. He took part in that. To connect the Atlantic and Pacific Oceans to Central America. Buchanan met repeatedly with the Lord Clarendon, the British Foreign Minister, hoping to pressure the British to withdraw from Central America according to the Monroe Doctrine. This man was a part of all of this. He wasn't a know-nothing. He wasn't an idiot on the sidelines. The man believed in representing all of the United States, not a part of it. He tried to get Britain to withdraw. And another thing that he really tried to push the best he could was the acquisition of Cuba. If he'd been able to acquire Cuba, we would have a lot less problems today, wouldn't we? And he used the Monroe Doctrine to try to do that also. Buchanan, because he was away from what was going on here with the slave states, etc., he was not known to be on one side or the other, the Kansas-Nebraska Act or anything. He was an outsider because he was in Europe all that time. The Fugitive Slave Act was simply that the North, the abolitionists, would go down and help the slaves escape and they take them to the north, and then they would try to fight for the return so that they would not be returned to the south. Well, then they passed the fugitive slave law, which meant that if a slave was taken by an abolitionist to the north, that legally he had to be returned because he was property. They were stealing from the south. They weren't letting any of their northern slaves out of the factories go to the south. And see, the north was very, very dependent upon the great industry and factories, weren't they? One culture was trying to cancel out the other culture. The man that would do that would be Abraham Lincoln. Abraham Lincoln came in to divide the nation. Now, he was a great man and a brilliant man, but he came in to divide the nation and cancel the other culture, which he did. This man did everything he could do to stop that. He tried to call for an end to anti-slavery agitation. Stephen A. Douglas began running for the presidency. And he also stood for states' rights. John C. Breckinridge of Kentucky would become Buchanan's running mate. When he faced the two candidates that were running against him, Millard Fillmore, for the American Party, or the Know-Nothings candidate, and John C. Fremont, which was a total idiot. I mean, we got Fremont populars and all kinds of stuff. If you really want to know what kind of a man John C. Fremont was, why don't you listen to or go and look for his great guides that guided him through all this. Walker, Joseph Walker said of him, he would call him a woman except that it would disgrace the feminine gender. He said he never saw such an idiot in his life. But he ran for president because his wife's family were highly involved in politics. Buchanan did not really actively campaign. He thought it was kind of what we might call aggressive for a man to campaign. He would let the chips fall, whichever they may. He wrote letters and pledged to uphold the Democratic platform. He carried every slave state except for Maryland, as well as five slavery-free states, including his own home state of Pennsylvania. His presidency, he won 45% of the popular vote and decisively won the electoral vote, taking 174 of 296 votes. His election to presidency made him the first president from Pennsylvania. Buchanan denounced the Republicans, calling them a dangerous and geographical party. A dangerous and geographical party. They were only representing one part of the country. They were ignoring the other culture. This is what we call cancel culture. We're in that situation again today. It didn't happen just once. If you don't study history, you're bound to repeat it. And here we are repeating this situation again today. He said that any administration should not cancel out the other society they're representing. He wanted to restore harmony to the Union and a conservative government. He tried his best in his cabinet to represent all of the states of the Union. Now, it is very hard to please everybody, isn't it? It's very hard to please everybody. He was inaugurated on March the 4th, 1857. Taking his oath of office from Justice Roger B. Taney. In his inaugural address, he committed himself to serving only one term. But he was going to do the best he could as President of the United States, all of the United States, not some of it. He was not going to be a sectional president. He was going to be a president of all the country. He had expressed an absolute abhorrence for the growing divisions over slavery and its status in all the territories. He said that Congress should play no role in determining the status of slavery in other states and territories. He also declared his support for the popular sovereignty. Buchanan recommended that the Federal Slave Code be enacted to protect rights of slave owners in federal territories. He alluded to the Supreme Court case, the Dred Scott versus Stanford case. We heard about the Dred Scott where this slave named Dred Scott was taken into a free state, and then he didn't want to go back with his master. And finally, the decision was that he was his master's property, and he was not a citizen of the United States. Buchanan sought to establish an obedient, harmonious cabinet to avoid the infighting that plagued Andrew Jackson's administration. He chose 4 Southerners and 3 Northerners. 4 Southerners and 3 Northerners. The Northerners, they were considered to be doughfaces again. Doughfaces, white faces, representing their opinions. He tried to dominate the cabinet, and he chose men who would agree with his views. Concentrating on foreign policy, he said, "We need to get this mess straightened up in here, and let's start dealing with the rest of the world. Let's quit talking about a civil war and succeeding and dividing the nation. Let's have a united nation and let's go and see what we can do with the foreign governments." And to giving us a power to be reckoned with. Buchanan appointed 1 Chief Justice, Nathan Clifford. He supported and appointed 7 other federal judges in the United States District Courts. He faced the panic of 1857 where we had a crash, an absolutely financial crash. There were 1,400 state banks that crashed. Now, the South, during this period of time, basically escaped from this financial crisis. And the increase in the unemployment of the North. He agreed that much of the financial collapse of the panic of 1857 was the North's fault because of over-speculation and overextending their ability to pay back what they borrowed. During his presidency, he believed in reform and not relief. He would not curtail public works, but no other public works would be added. He believed in reducing paper money, because paper money is just a promise. He believed in the real deal, gold and silver. He urged the states to restrict banks to a credit level of $3 to $1, a specie and encourage the use of federal or state bonds as security for banknotes. He was trying to stabilize the economy. By the time he left office, the federal deficit had gone to $17 million. During his time, I said that he had a lot of problems with Mormons in Utah Territory. He had a conflict with a Brigham Young who had grown increasingly hostile to America. He had his own militia. He wanted to rule his own country. He wanted to have a country within a country. And he was hostile to any federal intervention in his political, religious societies. In Utah, there was a Missouri and Arkansas headed for California, these people. And Mormons dressed up as Indians and slaughtered and massacred them all in what we call the Mountain Meadows Massacre. Now, Buchanan was absolutely infuriated by Brigham Young's militarism and polygamous behavior. Remember, Brigham Young had 75 wives. And he considered himself the ruler of all of Utah Territory. Buchanan considered the Latter-day Saints to be an open rebellion against the United States government. And he, July 1857, he sent Alfred Cumming, accompanied with the army, to replace Young as governor. They defied federal authority in every way they could. They finally got the situation settled in Utah. And Brigham Young kind of conceded to some extent. And then we have Bleeding Kansas problem. The Kansas-Nebraska Act of 1854. That Kansas Territory allowed settlers there to decide whether to allow slavery or not in their areas. Now, they had two capitals in Kansas. Two capitals. The Northern abolitionists were there, and then they organized a government in Topeka, Kansas. But the more numerous pro-slavery settlers, many of them had come from the neighboring state of Missouri. They established a government in Lecompton. giving the territory two different governments, two distinct constitutions. James looked upon and accepted the government of the free states instead of the one in Topeka, Kansas. There was a tremendous Kansas conflict. They called it Bleeding Kansas. Now, I want you to understand that John Brown and all of these different people that were starting the Civil War, they were abolitionists. The South just wanted to be left alone and leave their culture alone. And they would sooner or later phase it out on their own. Buchanan tried in every way to secure congressional approval by favors, patronage, and appointments, even cash for votes. And this wasn't the first time Abraham Lincoln did the same thing, except to a great more extent, to a more vast extent. The Bleeding Kansas, in other words, the abolitionists were attacking the slave owners of Kansas and killing them. And there was a war there in Kansas over whether it would be a free state or a slave state. Now, the slave owners and that thing just wanted to be left alone again, but the other ones wanted to make them correspond and comply to their ideas, the cancel culture idea. Basically, it was an all-out war there to try to cancel out Southern culture and slavery in the Nebraska Act and what we call Bleeding Kansas. His foreign policy was wonderful. He did everything he could do to protect the United States from other empires. He tried to enforce the Monroe Doctrine in the Central and South American states. And he hoped to renegotiate the Clayton-Bulwer Treaty. And he also sought to establish American protectorates over the Mexican states of Chihuahua and Sonora. He hoped to achieve a long-term goal of acquiring Cuba from Spain. He thought Cuba was a very important occupation there, that he should get Cuba because Cuba is so close, the Monroe Doctrine again. Anything close to America, we want no other foreign nations. And of course, we had almost a war with Russia over Cuba in John Kennedy's administration. Buchanan's ambitions in Cuba and Mexico were blocked by the House of Representatives. He tried to acquire Alaska from Russia because he had been what? He had been the foreign representative in Russia. And he wanted to acquire it to get rid of the Mormons and put them and make Alaska as a Mormon colony. Get them as far away as they could get them. Now, many people don't know that. But the United States and Russia were unable to agree upon a price at that time. In 1858, Buchanan ordered the Paraguay expedition to punish Paraguay for firing on a USS Waterwitch. And the expedition resulted in a Paraguayan apology and payment of indemnity. The chiefs of Raetia and Taha in the South Pacific refusing to accept the rule of King Tamatea The fifth, unsuccessfully petitioned the United States to accept the islands under a protectorate in June of 1858. Buchanan was given a herd of elephants by the King of Siam. One of them he kept at the White House with his other presidential gifts, dogs and bald eagles and a Newfoundland dog. They accused Buchanan as being a very partisan person because he protected the South and the Southern rights. They tried to impeach him because of that, but it didn't work. He went on and triumphed through all of these ordeals that he had. In the 1860 Democratic National Convention, in April of that year, Stephen A. Douglas had led in every ballot. Stephen A. Douglas and Abraham Lincoln had a series of whistle-stop debates. And during this whistle-stop debates, Lincoln made his ideas known that he was not going to represent the South, that a nation divided against itself could not stand, and so basically you have to cancel out the other culture. As soon as Lincoln was elected as president, many states began to secede from the Union. Now remember, in the beginning, Buchanan said that the South had a right to, the Southern states had a right to secede from the Union because their culture was being canceled. And they had a right to believe and to practice what they believed. Many people condemn Buchanan for not doing more when the states seceded from the Union. But it wasn't his ball game anymore. He was given a deck of cards, a hand that no man could have played. And I think he did the best he could. He tried to preserve the Union the best he could. He even proposed a constitutional amendment. He added three new states, Minnesota, Oregon, and Kansas, during his administration. You're not going to hear this. He subverted the Civil War during his watch. He tried to protect Fort Sumter, and yet he was basically in a lame duck presidency at that time. Another man had been elected. It was going to be all up to Lincoln, and the Southern states knew where Lincoln was going to stand, and they just decided that they had a right to leave the Union. If it no longer represented him, they would leave it. Buchanan was also always known as a doughface because he believed that the Southern states had a right, a voice. He believed that the Constitution comprised restraints composed not by arbitrary authority, but by the people upon themselves and their own representatives. The people's interests may seem identical, but the eye of local and sectional prejudice always appear to be in conflicting. He said the jealousy of the North over the South was the greatest problem of division of this nation. Now, he never got married. James Buchanan never got married. He fell in love with a woman named Anne Caroline Coleman. And he courted her. She was the daughter of a very wealthy iron manufacturer, Robert Coleman. She is also the sister-in-law of the Philadelphia judge, Joseph Hemphill, one of Buchanan's colleagues. In 1819, the two were engaged. and spent little time together. He was so busy. He said, I was never overly romantic at all. He said, I'd love to get married, but he said, I haven't found a woman that could put up with my non-romantic attitude. He loved this woman. And then there were rumors that he was having an affair with other women and she wanted to believe it. He didn't have time for her. He didn't have time for other women either. But this was a woman of his life, the love of his life. And she broke off the engagement. And he said, I feel happiness has fled from me forever. I believe romantic happiness has fled from me forever. And he never got married. He wrote her father. She died December the 9th, 1819. She just up and died. You know what happened. And James Buchanan wrote to her father for permission to attend the funeral. And he said no, he couldn't. He never courted another woman after that at all. So, I mean, the rumors about that he was having an affair with some other woman were kind of ridiculous because he never courted any other woman after that. He never had another love affair at all in his life. They also accused him of having an affair with James Polk's widow, Sarah Childress Polk, which he probably didn't do either. Buchanan did everything he could do to intercede for the South with Abraham Lincoln. He also did everything he could do to protect the former president of the Confederate States of America. He believed that there was always room for compromise. He believed that America, in the starting of the Civil War, was canceling out another culture in America arbitrarily. And he didn't believe in that. He believed that America was committing treason as a whole in its leadership. And that they were literally accusing Buchanan of treason. Now there are several places in Pennsylvania, areas that were named after Buchanan. Three counties are named in his honor in Iowa, Missouri, and Virginia. Another in Texas. He believed that America should be united, and only America could survive if it was united. He believed that every culture in America ought to be represented by the leaders of America. James Buchanan was a real American hero. They blamed him for the Civil War. James Buchanan did not start the Civil War. The election of Abraham Lincoln started the Civil War. Because Lincoln wanted to cancel out the culture of the South. And he did, as we know. Abraham Lincoln was a wonderful, brilliant man and statesman. We're facing a counterculture today. Conservative America, according to the Democrats today, needs to be canceled out and have a one-party system. When Abraham Lincoln became president of the United States, he was dead set on canceling out the Southern culture. He tried to compromise, he said, but he had had so many debates with Stephen A. Douglas, they knew where he stood. And when he was elected, it wasn't anything to do with James Buchanan. It had everything to do with Abraham Lincoln, why we have the Civil War. And I'll get into that in the next message. But I want you to understand one thing. Slavery wasn't dissolved in America after the Civil War. There were still American Indian slaves, and there were still slaves in the northern factories. Father, I pray that people will learn from this and learn from the mistakes of men and nations. And Father, I pray that you use this message somehow to build up this nation instead of tearing it down. We have a culture out there that's trying to cancel out all other cultures and all other opinions. Father, it's happened before. And it's happened again. We see a civil war absolutely in the tide. I don't want to see that. We need to represent all the people under a government that is founded upon you, according to Romans, the 13th chapter. Father, please forgive me where I fail you. In Jesus' name I pray. Amen.